Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Church of the Holy Sepulchre is a church first constructed in the 4th century CE, but then rebuilt and reconstructed countless times since, and it's considered to be the holiest place in the Christian faith. We've got thousands of years of religious history to get across here, with the tale of this church having some extremely amusing quirks that I think you'll enjoy. So let's get to it. The story of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre goes back to 70 CE and the first Jewish-Roman war that saw the destruction of much of the entire city of Jerusalem. This was the same war that destroyed the second temple, Herod's temple, which you can hear more about in Monuments Episode 8, The Western War, get across it. And in the wake of this war, around 50 years after it concluded, the Roman Emperor Hadrian oversaw some major building projects that were designed to revitalize Jerusalem as a Roman colony. And it was one of these building projects that took place on a rocky hillside on the outskirts of the city, where Hadrian ordered the construction of a temple to one of the Roman gods, either Jupiter or Venus. Now, there were some minor setbacks that delayed construction a little bit. There was an inconveniently located cave that needed to be filled in before building could start. But once that was taken care of, this temple was built in or around 135 CE. And this temple stood there for about 300 years until a different Roman emperor, Constantine the Great, came along. Now, Constantine is, of course, an unbelievably important figure in world history. He was the first Roman emperor to convert to Christianity, and he was instrumental in spreading this new religion like never before. But in Jerusalem, one of his bishops, a bloke named Macarius, he came to Constantine and he asked him, he said, "Listen, mate, could I have a bit of a dig around this old temple that Hadrian had built, right? Because I've got a bit of a suspicion," he says, "that there might be something more to it. There might be something more going on with this rocky hillside than people are realizing." So Constantine signs off and he says, "Absolutely, mate, go ahead." Macarius, he began his excavations around this temple and rediscovered this cave that had been filled in by Hadrian, as well as, apparently, the remains of 3 crucifixes. And after making this discovery, Macarius announced that he had found Calvary, also known as Golgotha, the hill upon which Jesus of Nazareth had been crucified almost 300 years ago. Furthermore, the cave that the Romans had initially filled in under Hadrian, Macarius claimed that this cave was where Jesus had been entombed after his crucifixion, before then, according to Christian mythology, being resurrected, ascending to heaven so he could chill out with his dad. Now, quite aside from whatever your religious beliefs are, it's not really up for debate that Jesus was indeed a real historical person. He actually existed, and he also was actually crucified. Now, there is less historical evidence to suggest that he rose from the dead, but his crucifixion was a real thing that happened to a real person, and there is no historical consensus as to exactly where it took place. On the outskirts of Jerusalem, outside the city walls, generally is accepted, but precisely where is unknown. And certainly there is no real issue with the place that Macarius identified. It ticks all the boxes based on what we know about the historical crucifixion. So the discovery of Calvary was huge, if true. And again, there's certainly no reason that this couldn't be the place in question that Jesus died. It had to happen somewhere, and maybe Macarius actually found the right spot. Constantine certainly believed that he did, and so he ordered the demolition of the Roman temple and instead the construction of a Christian church to commemorate what is, of course, the holiest place in the Christian religion. And so the first Church of the Holy Sepulchre was built. It was consecrated on the 13th of September 335. And at first, it consisted of two separate buildings, a big rectangular basilica that covered Calvary itself, the little rocky outcrop where Jesus was thought to have been crucified, and a big round rotunda covering the entrance to the cave where Jesus was thought to have been buried. Now, this church complex that Constantine built, it doesn't exist anymore. If you visit the site today, you'll find a different church, a newer church built centuries later. But the fact remains that from the 4th century onwards, this location in Jerusalem has been venerated by Christians as the holiest and most sacred place in their religion. But the original buildings, they didn't fare too well. In 614, the Persian Sassanid Empire attacked the Byzantine-controlled Jerusalem and captured the city. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre was burnt down and lay in ruins until the city was recaptured by the Byzantines in 630. Byzantine Emperor Heraclius rebuilt the church, But even then, I'll tell you this, its trials and tribulations are far from over. Jerusalem was conquered by Muslims not long after the church was rebuilt by the Byzantines. And while its new Muslim rulers largely left the church alone and allowed the sizable Christian population of Jerusalem to worship there, Mother Nature had other ideas. In 746, the church was hit by an earthquake, and then again by another one before 810. Then later, a fire ripped through it in 841, and then another fire in 938. And then conflict between Christians and Muslims in 966 escalated to the point that rioters set fire to the church once again. The church was repaired and restored each time, but I think it's fair to say we are well and truly getting into a Church of Theseus situation here, although that situation was ultimately put to bed as we move into the 11th century. Because while the Muslim rulers of Jerusalem had protected the rights of Christian worshippers, broadly speaking, since conquering the city back in the 7th century, this attitude began to change as we, as I say, move into the 11th century. And in the year 1009, on the orders of the ruling Fatimid Caliph, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre was almost completely demolished. Once the wrecking crews were finished, hardly anything of the church remained at all. And this decision to raise the church to the ground would have far-reaching historical consequences. Let me tell you, it enraged Christians throughout Europe, and it was one of the key motivators behind the Christian Crusades into the Holy Land later on in the 11th century. Initially, the Christian Byzantines negotiated with the Islamic Fatimids for the rebuilding of the church. They agreed to reopen a major mosque in Constantinople in exchange. And so in the mid-11th century, the church was rebuilt once again. But even this did not quell the fury that European Christians felt after the destruction of their most holy site. And this, in addition to other factors like the incursions of Seljuk Turks into Byzantine lands, a strong desire to see Jerusalem return to being under Christian control, this was one of the reasons that Pope Urban II called the First Crusade in 1096. In fact, the First Crusade was actually considered a pilgrimage, an armed pilgrimage certainly, but a pilgrimage all the same, and those who set off to fight in the Crusade were expected to visit and pray at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Now, long story short, when it comes to the First Crusade, it ended in a victory for the crusading Christians who took control of Jerusalem and therefore took control of their most sacred church once again. And the Christians who were now in charge of Jerusalem also were in charge of the restoration of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. They rebuilt it, this time in the Romanesque style, and this version of the church actually connected the two buildings that had historically been separate, the basilica and the rotunda. Rather obviously, of course, it remained a very popular destination for religious tourism, even after the Crusade wrapped up. Even today, there is still graffiti that was carved into its walls by pilgrims and even crusaders. But the church's restoration, it was completed in 1149, just in time for Saladin to come along and capture it and the rest of the city in 1187, episode 201, Get Across It. In the following decades, Jerusalem would go between being under Islamic and Christian control, before then being conquered by the Khwarezmians in 1244, before then again now being reconquered by the Muslims, this time under the Ottoman Empire. And throughout this period of Ottoman control, Christians were still given largely unrestricted access to their church, but the church sadly wasn't particularly well maintained throughout the late medieval period, and it fell into disrepair. Unsurprising, I suppose, given the sheer volume of people coming to visit it. but it wasn't until the mid-16th century that the Catholic Church put a lot of work into renovating and restoring the church. However, at this point in the church's history, a new conflict really began to come to the fore and prevent some, not all Christians, some Christians from being able to worship at the church, depending on the way that certain political winds were blowing. Let me explain. People had been fighting over Jerusalem for centuries, of course, but all the while, even though the city changed hands over and over again, in broad terms, Christians had never really been prevented from worshipping in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, apart from, I guess, you know, the time that the Fatimids knocked the whole thing down, sure. But generally speaking, worshippers and pilgrims had always had access to this church. But as we move out of the medieval period now, a new challenge began to be put in place for worshipping Christians in accessing this church. And no, it was not the Ottomans. It wasn't the Muslim rulers of Jerusalem. It was, in fact, other Christians. It was the Catholics that restored the church in the mid-16th century. But after this, they came into conflict with the Eastern Orthodox Church over who had custodianship of the place. Both the Catholics and the Orthodox would petition, and also usually bribe, the Ottoman Emperor to give their side authority over the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And that was in addition to the Armenian Apostolic Church, the Syriac Orthodox Church, the Coptic Orthodox Church, and the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church, all eventually trying to muscle in on the joint as well. In some cases, the conflicts between these various Christian denominations would turn violent, and after decades and decades of unending fighting between these Christians, all trying to claim control of their church, the Ottomans had had enough. Because the Christians couldn't play and share nicely, in 1757, Ottoman Sultan Osman III, he made a decree, a firman, which has become known as the status quo. Now, the status quo had affected all in all nine different religious sites throughout Jerusalem and Bethlehem, including the Western Wall, interestingly, but its most amusing consequences certainly have to do with the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Because when it comes to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, what the status quo did is this. It divided the primary custodianship of the church between the Catholic, the Orthodox, and the Armenian Apostolic churches, and it also gave over some space specifically within the church for those smaller denominations that I mentioned as well. The Protestants are left out altogether from this equation. You might have already figured that out, but from what I can tell, they don't really seem to mind. This sort of thing isn't really their deal. But each church was responsible for different sections of the building, and still are today. It has, for want of a better term, internal borders. Actually, no. I'll tell you what it's more like. It's more like a shared bedroom between squabbling siblings, with the Ottomans acting as parents, coming in and sorting everything out through all the crocodile tears. But hilariously, I was going to say the funniest thing about the status quo. It's not. The second funniest thing about the status quo, right, is that no single Christian denomination has control of the church's main entrance. Back in 1192, Saladin gave the prominent Islamic Nusabaya family the keys to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and also charged them with the responsibility for opening and closing its doors. And the status quo upheld Saladin's appointment of the Nusabaya clan. And believe it or not, even today, almost 1,000 years after Saladin, the keys to the holiest site in the Christian religion are kept by Muslims, just to keep the Christians from fighting with one another about who gets to close and lock the door. But as I say, this isn't the funniest part, right? This isn't the best part about the status quo, because the status quo didn't just strictly divide up the church. It didn't just decide who got to be the keeper of the keys and open and close the door each day. It also ordered that without the specific agreement of all of its custodians, nothing about the Church of the Holy Sepulchre can change. No one can move anything. The church has to stay exactly as it was back in 1757. And believe it or not, this status quo is still in place today and has led to some of the most ridiculous situations emerging from the church. Most absurd of all, and you may have actually heard of this. If you haven't, buckle yourself up, because you're in for a wild ride here. Check this out, right? It has led to something called the immovable ladder. In 1728, a mason who was working on the church, he propped up a ladder. He propped up a ladder underneath a window so he could work on the church's masonry. And he seems to have forgotten about it. He left it there after he packed up the tools and headed off for the day. And this ladder stayed where it was for another 30 years until 1757, when it was still in place, still under this window, when the status quo was put into effect, and it is still there today. There are drawings and engravings and photographs that show that this ladder has stood there for over 250 years. Every time it has been moved or removed, it's caused a huge amount of controversy and conflict, and the ladder has always been returned to its original spot as required by the status quo. It's not bolted down. It's not particularly sturdy. It's not like it's a fire escape or something. It is just a rickety wooden ladder, right? That still stands in this place that the mason once put it. And so rigid is people's adherence to the status quo. The holiest Christian church on earth has this random wooden ladder halfway up one of its walls. Just in case you're wondering, you think, okay, surely they can't take the status quo this seriously. Surely stuff moves around in the church just by nature of people coming and going from it every day. No, have a listen to this, right? In 1902, a huge dispute arose between the Catholics and the Orthodox because they couldn't agree who got to sweep one of the steps in the church. Not who had to. They weren't trying to palm off a chore onto the other church. Both of them were fighting to get to sweep the step. And when I say fighting, I mean this literally. 18 clergymen, men of the cloth, ended up in hospital before the Ottomans had to step in. They had to intercede and decree that both the Catholics and the Orthodox were allowed to sweep the step. So presumably this step is extra clean. It's sparkling. It's getting twice as much sweeping as everywhere else in the church. But then a century later in 2002, right? A couple of decades ago, on a hot day, a Coptic Orthodox monk, he moved the chair that he was sitting on out of the sun and into the shade. And this enraged the Ethiopians this time, who, in the grand tradition of conflict resolution within the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, let their fists do the talking and sent 11 people to hospital. And then again, 2 years later, the Catholics left a door open during an Orthodox celebration. Another day, another fist fight. Christians take the status quo very seriously indeed. Except, I guess, the Protestants, it seems, who don't really have a dog in the race. In fact, in 1997, a Protestant stole the immovable ladder and hid it in the church behind an altar, seemingly just as a bit of a gag. And that, check this out, this is so good. That was what forced, finally, some unity between all the other denominations. They came together and they agreed to install a grate on the window overlooking the ladder so those bastard Protestants couldn't steal it again. So isn't that lovely? Really, isn't that just such a nice thing? These squabbling, feuding, acrimonious Christian denominations finally brought together in peace and harmony, united by their mutual dislike of Protestants. Anyway, because of the status quo, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is largely as it was 250 years ago. Yet another fire broke out in the church in 1808, but the damage was repaired with the consent of all the denominations. And since then, there have been various building, renovation, restoration works. In 1868, they came together once again to work on the church's dome. And into the 20th century, ironwork had to be installed on the church's exterior to prevent its structure from becoming dangerously destabilized. And since then, even as Jerusalem has changed hands again and again, the church has remained, with constant work being done to it to conserve and maintain it, all under the very close supervision of the various Christian denominations, of course. All the way through to the modern day, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre has undergone preservation work, most of it designed to support and bolster the building's structure, which, due to age and constant use, is weaker than people would like. And if you visit the church today, you'll be able to see things like the tomb of Jesus, where he is said to have been buried, or the rock of Calvary, where he is said to have been crucified. There's even a little marker that has been put on the supposed location of the cross itself, although how they figured out exactly where that was is beyond me. But as you can imagine, with six different Christian denominations crammed into it, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is a... It's a rather eclectic building in its style and decoration, but it is all the same a fascinating place and looks to be well worth a visit. Just be mindful if you do go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre to make sure you don't nudge any chairs out of place, because if you do, you better be ready for a punch-up with some very angry priests.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.